Donovan, good morning.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Under the terms of the Rail Safety Improvement Act of 2008, toxic inhalation hazard materials, TIH, or PIH as the government chooses to call it, including chlorine, cannot move after January 1st, 2016, except over rail lines, mainline rail lines, that are equipped with positive train control. Accordingly, we really have two parties before this court that are regulated by that statute. One is, of course, the railroads, the AAR and its members, who after January 1st, 2016, cannot move TIH materials over mainline tracks unless they're equipped with positive train control. Secondly, the members of the Chlorine Institute are also regulated in that after January 1st, 2016, they cannot request transportation over mainline tracks that are not equipped with positive train control.
I think the government says the Surface Transportation Board would have to allow it in those circumstances. I'm going to ask them about this, but what's your response to that?
Well, I think, Your Honor, there's two responses to that. Number one, the government here, the FRA, has no expertise in the administration of the Surface Transportation Board statute, the ICC Termination Act. So when they say that, they just say it. They don't interpret the statute in question. The statute in question is 49 U.S. Code 11101, which provides, and it's provided for 100 years, really, that a railroad must provide common carrier transportation services upon reasonable request. Now, I ask the question rhetorically, is it reasonable to request transportation over a line of railroad that the federal statute, the RSIA 08, says you can't move it over because it's not equipped with positive train control? In the alternative, can I go to the Surface Transportation Board and say, I want you to order the railroad to put positive train control on that track so that you can comply with the statute, when in fact it's the FRA that determines what tracks are equipped with positive train control? It's not the Surface Transportation Board. I don't think that such an action would last very long in front of this court if the Surface Transportation Board were to take such an aggressive interpretation of its statute that it now can trump the positive train control requirements of the RSAI 08.
So on the merits, what's
the merits of this case?
What's the violation?
Well, the merits of this case are intriguing, Your Honor, for this reason. Number one, we had two.
Can I just interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
To say, the way I see it is you had a more favorable interpretation going in 2010. They pulled back, and it's a less favorable interpretation now, but I'm having trouble seeing where the violation of law is in their change in.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Fair enough. Number one, the interpretation you make reference to in 2010, two of them actually, the initial final rule and a second final rule, which is the same interpretation, basically say that we understand that cost-benefit analysis is normally relied upon in regulatory proceedings like this one. But we interpret this statute as requiring that we not yield to that. We have seen cost-benefit analyses for a long, long time with respect to positive train control. We have never been able to justify positive train control installation or implementation based upon a cost-benefit analysis tied to safety benefits. We've never been able to do that, and we can't do it now. But it is our interpretation of this statute that Congress wants us to impose positive train control implementation on a snapshot of rail lines that existed in 2008. And if you're going to depart from that by pulling back, so to speak, and allowing the railroads to no longer transport over that base year period, 2008 period, you've got to pass two tests. And those two tests are risk-based. They're based upon, are you going to be more safe or less safe after you withdraw and reroute that traffic? Secondly, they go out of their way in both of those rulemakings to point out that the railroads have long wanted to get TIH off their rails. There's no question about that. In testimony presented before the FRA. I'll get to your question in a moment, Your Honor. This is by way of background to it.
That's helpful.
In the testimony presented by Dr. Kaplan, of U.S. Magnesium, that's in the joint appendix at page 132 and following, he points out that they have a plant located in Salt Lake City, near Salt Lake City. They produce chlorine, they produce magnesium using brine from the Great Salt Lake. So it's going to be there. The Great Salt Lake isn't going to move. So they have to produce it there. They ship the chlorine to various places, and they can't be in business without shipping it by rail. The only railroad that serves that plant is Union Pacific. Union Pacific came to the Surface Transportation Board and said, we don't want to give them rates into Texas because chlorine is dangerous. We don't like to carry it. So we don't want to give them rates into Texas. Because we say that there are producers closer to Texas, then there will be less risk if we move it in from someplace other than from Salt Lake City. The STB said, no, you can't do that. The STB then relied upon the section that I referred to, 49 U.S.C. 11101, and said that request by U.S. Magnesium for rates into Texas is reasonable. Everybody knows chlorine is dangerous. The statutes have been adopted, interpreted, and progressed for years. In fact, FRA has testified and did testify in that case that chlorine had to move. And it was vital to the national economy and vital to the national interest. So that request for transportation is reasonable. But I submit to you, Your Honor, that if I were to go and ask the STB to order railroad to provide service over track that's not PTC equipped in violation of federal law, that would not be a reasonable interpretation, a reasonable request. If it were determined to be a reasonable request, that would take some legislative and or judicial action that I do not anticipate. I don't think it would be considered reasonable to say, I want you to violate this federal statute. And it wouldn't be reasonable to say to the STB, I want you to order them to impose positive train control when the FRA said you don't have to.
Your concern, I think, is that they looked at costs here. That's one of your concerns, right?
Well, now let's, you remind me of your question. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, and let me just say on that, I thought the way this worked is they're looking forward to 2016, and for track in 2016 that's not going to have passengers or hazardous materials, they thought, well, we perhaps shouldn't impose the obligation on those tracks because, in part, it's going to cost so much to the railroad industry. And I'm trying to figure out why that's legally.
Okay, and going back to my original point, the initial interpretation of those first two final orders said, we want this to be put upon the 2008 base year snapshot of the rail system. If you're going to change it, you've got to justify why you're changing it. And the way you justify it is by using this two-part test. Otherwise, if you just allow them to change it, the 2008 year base year means nothing. They can just change it. They can ignore what happened in 2008. It doesn't matter. If it didn't happen on January 30th.
But wasn't the problem that was identified that in 2016 some of, and you know more than I do, but in 2016 some of this track that in 2008 had hazardous material or passengers wasn't going to in 2016?
If I may, Your Honor.
Yes.
The difference between hazardous material and TIH is quite dramatic.
TIH I'll use.
Okay, because TIH is a very small percentage of the rail traffic. And I go to the U.S.
TIH or TIH? TIH?
Take your choice.
Okay, TIH.
They're interchangeable.
But it's very dangerous.
You're right, it is very dangerous, as you know from the Williams versus CSX case. Of course it's very dangerous, Your Honor.
And Graniteville was
life.
Terrible.
And Graniteville would have prevented by PTC.
Right.
And that's why the statute was passed, among other reasons.
Well, I just said, when you said it's very different from hazardous materials, I didn't know what you meant, because
TIH is very hazardous. There's no question about that. And nobody argues about that. That's why the Chlorine Institute exists.
The point was, looking ahead to 2016, I think, mm-hmm. You tell me why this is wrong, there was some anticipation that certain track wasn't going to have this TIH, and therefore, because it would cost so much to put the positive train control on, why put it on track that wasn't going to have any TIH?
Well, there you go back to the first two orders, where the agency recognized that the incentive on the part of the railroads is to limit tracks over which TIH is going to move, because every mile they don't move it is a mile they don't have to put PTC on it. So the incentive, the economic incentive, is overpowering to the railroads to limit TIH to as few routes as possible. They already tried to do that with U.S. Magnesium and couldn't do it. They could in 2016 because they wouldn't put PTC on that line.
But isn't there some method that's being used to predict what's going to be the state of the play in 2016?
Well, there's an interesting point, Your Honor. The railroads say there's 10,000 miles of track that are not going to carry TIH in 2016. Mm-hmm. They say that on 10,000 miles of track, they can't pass the two-part test. Therefore, don't impose it on us because we can't pass it. Well, implicit in that is we can't pass it because we're not going to be safe. We're not going to be comparatively safe with that rerouted traffic. We're going to be less safe, or we'd be able to pass the test. So here you have a result-oriented, as you're pointing out, Your Honor. We want to save the money, therefore everything else is okay. We don't have to show we're safer. We don't have to show an equivalent level of safety. We don't have to show, as 2015782 says, you've got to assess areas of greater risk before you assess areas of lesser risk. You don't even have to look at risk assessment in this third final rule. The first two final rules depended entirely upon risk assessment. We're evaluating risk. We're trying to prevent incidents. We're trying to prevent accidents. And at the same time, said the agency correctly, Congress never intended to drive TIH traffic off the rails by the imposition of the statute.
Well, is your argument that there can't be any cost-benefit analysis?
Of course not.
Okay. So you agree that it's appropriate for FRA to look at the cost of this and to try to give the railroads as much relief as possible?
Of course.
Okay.
Provided, Your Honor, provided they do so consistent with their interpretation of the statute. And, Your Honor, you suggest...
I just want to understand this because this is odd to me, because as I understand what FRA says about this statute, it's that you really can't do any useful cost-benefit analysis because it's always cost more to do positive train control than the benefits.
That's what they said, and that's accurate. Okay. And they justify that conclusion.
So what is the point then? I mean, isn't that just another way of saying no cost-benefit analysis?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because the railroads argue that in their appeal of this rule, the first two rules, which are pending before this court, they haven't been dismissed. They argue that the FRA totally disregarded cost-benefit. I don't think that's true. All other things being equal, obviously cost-benefit's very important. But the other things that are equal are the safety considerations and the security considerations that Congress was relying upon when they passed this statute. Now, we may argue, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
Well, I'm just trying to understand the parameters here. It sounds like that even under this new 2012 rule, they're only taking out about 10,000 miles of track out of 70,000, something like that.
The railroads say 14,000. Or 7,000, and FRA says 10,000, but we don't know what 10,000. Okay. That's never been identified. So I don't know what that number really is or would be.
All right. So that at least sounds like a fairly modest amount. But you seem to be saying that those are going to be the miles that your clients are worried about, right?
Well, there's 10,000 miles of track that's carrying this mainline track. That's carrying TIH.
Now.
That's 10,000 miles of track that I can't use to serve my customers. That's not insignificant.
Well, okay, one question that I have, though, is if we don't know what that is, we don't even know exactly how much of it there is, how are you injured until you know?
Your Honor, I know I'm injured on 10,000 miles because by definition, it's moving over that 10,000 miles now, and it's not going to be moving over that 10,000 miles in 2016. And I know the railroads say they can't pass the two-part test. So I know there's going to be a reduction in safety as a result of that. I know those two things. So I know that my client is not going to be able to ship over 10,000 miles of track, and I know that if it can't ship over some alternative route, it's going to be less safe and less secure. So I think Chamber of Commerce, I think we're looking right down the throat of a recognizable injury that's caused directly by the change in position of the FRA, not the change in interpretation, Your Honor. In their settlement agreement with the AAR, they say their interpretation was right in the first two final orders. They've never taken that back. They've never said our interpretation was wrong, or that President Obama's executive order, which says essentially the same thing as President Clinton's executive order 18 years before, they never recanted that. They never said, oh, we were wrong, and now we've got to look at cost-benefit. Their position is we're going to look at cost-benefit, but they never say their original interpretation was wrong. So when I say that they misinterpreted the statute, I think I'm wrong. I think they interpreted it correctly in the first two rules, and then they ignored it in the third rule. They didn't misinterpret it. They just ignored it.
I thought what was going on is that this was track that by some reliable method, and I want to ask the government about this, by some reliable method it was established that there wouldn't be TIH traveling in 2016, and therefore it wouldn't be equipped with a positive train control, but that you may want to use in the future but wouldn't be able to.
No, you're right.
That's not what's going on.
That's not what's going on.
Okay.
The fact is it's moving now.
I understand it's moving now.
And they're just going to stop it.
Okay, and that's what I guess I should ask the government how that's going to happen.
They're just going to stop it. They're just going to do what they tried to do with U.S. magnesium.
What about the common carrier obligation?
What common carrier obligation? It's not a reasonable request. If I don't have PTC on that line, I can't violate the law.
They can't avoid the PTC obligation so long as there's continuing traffic on the line, TIH traffic.
They're the ones who move the traffic. They just say, no, I'm not going to move it.
They can't.
Yes, they can.
With the common carrier obligation?
Common carrier obligation expires on January the 1st, 2016, because there's no PTC on the line.
Well, maybe I should talk to the government.
I want to ask one question. I think it's the same thing Judge Kavanaugh is asking, and that is when you say in 2016 the 10,000 miles, go back and say what you say is going to happen in 2016. And the question I have is when you said it's going to be less safe, it's going to be less secure, are you saying because it's going to be shipped other than by rail, or it's going to be shipped on lines that are not equipped with TIH? What do you mean when you say it's
well,
going to be less safe?
For purposes of this case, Your Honor, I cannot say the former. I think it's true, but I can't argue that. I can't say that anybody did an analysis, this is all going to move by truck and that's less safe. That wasn't part of this case. But I think it's true. And the FRA implies
aren't you saying that, though? Because you're saying there's this gap between the STB, who can require common carriage, but only the only if it's
positive train control.
Yeah, the positive train control, if it's met that, and it can't meet that and in 2016, and the STB cannot make that decision, that's got to be made by the FRA. I mean, it's almost got to go by something other than rail.
Well, no, Your Honor, for this reason.
Okay.
The two-part test really compares one railroad versus another railroad. It doesn't compare one railroad versus truck.
But the
railroads, in their testimony before Congress, the testimony that the FRA relies upon in its third rule, says they can't meet that test. So they're going to have to ship TIH over track that is less safe than the track it's moving over now.
Why is it less safe?
Because they can't meet the two-part test, and that's all the two-part test does.
Then they can't move it if they don't have the positive train control.
Oh, they'll put positive train control. What they'll do is they'll route it right through the middle of Washington, D.C., because it's got positive train control on it because there's passenger traffic here.
Well, they've done that. We had a case, I don't know, three or four
years. I know. That's the Williams versus CSX case. Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. I watched you on the screen in that case. No, that's the problem. And FRA recognizes in their initial final rule that the result of allowing them to simply abandon TIH on lines where it's currently moving and reduce the cost of positive train control, there's no question they're going to have to put PTC on mainline tracks that carry passengers.
Can I ask you, because it seems to me there was a third agency here that they were relying on, which has an acronym, I'm not sure.
PHMSA, I think it's.
PHMSA, okay. PHMSA, which restricts, you know, which has to deal with the transportation of hazardous materials, right? So between all three of these agencies, we can't get this resolved?
Well, I'm sure the government will argue yes. But in reality, the Surface Transportation Board is an independent organization. They were never asked for their opinion on this. They could have been, but they weren't. It's routine for these agencies to talk to one another about what's your interpretation of this statute or this provision. They didn't ask for that here. The PHMSA rule, in the first two final rules, the FRA determined that the PHMSA rule was done for an entirely different reason, security in the main, to be sure safety is involved, but it's mostly security. And the PHMSA security rules were not transparent. They're based upon privileged information, TSA-type information, secure information. So you really can't rely upon that to evaluate anything in a public domain about whether this is going to be more or less safe.
Well,
they say that. They say that in their own rule. And they're the ones who enforce the PHMSA rules, so they ought to know.
But doesn't it seem like they would probably not send TIH through Washington, D.C., for security reasons?
I can't really say that, Your Honor.
Okay.
They have done it for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. We'll give you all right. Any more questions? We'll give you a few minutes in response.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Mark Penick, Department of Justice. I represent the Department of Transportation and the FRA in this litigation. Once this Court understands how this statutory scheme works, this becomes a really easy case. It's not often I get to say that, particularly in this Court, but it really is. And it's easy on both standing and on the merits. The claimed injury here is the claim of inability to ship chlorine. Completely hypothetical. The way the system works is that each of the railroads must submit a PTC implementation plan, positive train control implementation plan, that will identify those track segments that are going to be removed from PIH traffic and those which are not. Those implementation plans are placed on the public docket for open to all, including the chlorine shippers, to examine. The chlorine shippers have a statutory right to insist on the common carriage of their chlorine. No one disputes that, least of all Department of Transportation. The agency went to great lengths to address the comments, saying that we are not intending to trump the Surface Transportation's Surface Transportation Board's authority to enforce that common carriage. So when they're suggesting that the PTC regulations somehow trump those obligations, that common carriage obligations, is quite to the contrary. The surface transportation jurisdictions and enforcement of that statutory provision, which is not repealed, trumps. So if the surface transportation says you must carry that shipper's chlorine, then PIH, positive train control equipment, will have to be installed.
That'll take a while.
Well, there's a 2 year period here in which they, under the regulations, in which they are allowed to. So there is certainly it may take a while.
What happens in those 2 years? Say we're in
2 years. They're allowed to ship chlorine.
Immediately?
Yes.
Are you authorized to say that for the Surface Transportation Board?
Yeah, I think it's in the regulations. I could give the court the site later. But there's a lot of slack built into this for incidental carriage, for de minimis carriage, for carriage over main lines by Class 2 carriers, for temporary carriage of these materials. So if we have an order from the Surface Transportation Board that makes it clear that certain this track will, in fact, have to be used, then that track's going to be equipped.
One of my questions is, how is the track being identified, this 10,000 miles, that's not going to be carrying TIC as of 2016?
That track was identified to the FRA during the hearings that the administrative they conducted in administrative proceedings. And the agency was satisfied that, in fact, that track could be abandoned by routing different places. Now, we're talking about, there's 60,000 miles of track that are still going to have positive train controls.
That's 10,000 miles that would have to be equipped with PTC that won't be.
Well, no. The way this works is that in 2008, we take a snapshot. Where did PHI, or poisonous by inhalation materials, travel in 2008? Mm-hmm. Now, there's nothing magic about that. The agency selected that, and that remains the rule. The implementation plan that each railroad must file has to use that as a baseline for identifying what track it won't be using for PIH traffic in 2016.
Right. Okay. And how do they make that showing?
Well, they make it by reference to the requirements that they have to have common carriage. They have to make it by reference to the requirements imposed upon them for safe routing by the Pipeline Hazardous Materials Safety Administration.
So where did the 10,000 miles come from if TIH is being carried over it still now?
Well, the 10,000 miles is by different routes. Now, there's no doubt
I guess my point is, are they unilaterally selecting the 10,000 miles that they don't want to carry TIH on and therefore won't have to?
Unilaterally, only in the sense that they are still controlled by an existing administrative regulatory scheme that requires certain services be provided and certain routing be employed by the Surface sure. Transportation Board and by PHMSA. So, the agency elected to abandon the two-part test, and there's nothing magic about the two-part test. It's not in statute. It's the one that the agency came up with at the time. And if subsequently realized, for example, this is footnote 11 and page 44 of our brief, that the residual risk test was utterly unworkable. Nobody could figure out how to make it work.
Let me ask a hypo to try to understand this, because I'm not really understanding it. Suppose there's track right now that I'll call it very hazardous materials being carried over. Okay? And they say, we're not going to be carrying that very hazardous material over that track in 2016 because we don't want to.
Well, it's not so much they don't want to, is that they can satisfy their common carriage and routing obligations
by taking them through a different route.
There's no doubt that the actual number of tracks employing poisonous by inhalation usage will shrink. That's contemplated by the statute itself.
Yes.
That's perfectly permissible. Mm-hmm. Congress didn't intend to impose maximum costs on the rail industry.
This might be more the standing point. Won't the rerouting that comes from pulling track out of the system that can carry very hazardous material increase the costs for the shippers?
It may or may not. We don't know until you actually look at a particular implementation plan, and that's not been challenged. The claimed injury here is not being able to ship at all. And that's utterly hypothetical. And not only hypothetical, but to the extent that there is a desire to ship, they have a right under the statute to demand shipment. And that, in the very case that my opposing counsel cites, the Surface Transportation says you must provide that carriage. So the common carriage obligation doesn't go away. And the FRA said as much in this very rule. That obligation trumps.
It does go away in the sense that right now they're carrying the very hazardous material over certain track that they're going to pull out and no longer do so as of 2016, and the FRA is saying, fine, therefore you don't have to do positive train control on that track.
Correct. But certainly they still have to be able to provide common carriage to the shipper upon reasonable request. And contrary to my opposing counsel statement, that does not get trumped by this system.
Does the rerouting satisfy the common carriage obligation?
Well, of course it does, but that, again,
okay.
will be
now
subject. That will be subject to a determination by the Surface Transportation Board, who has control over rates, over good service, and that is fully capable of administering those obligations, which remain fully in effect.
So I think the rerouting, and I guess this is for both of you on rebuttal too, the rerouting seems to me that's obviously going to increase costs, so that probably gives them standing, but I'm not sure why that violates any statute. So
it doesn't violate the statute.
On the merits, at
and
least
it
as
may
I'm
or may it. Not increase costs. Yeah. You don't have any record on that, and none was submitted to the agency. So it's purely hypothetical
isn't
for
that,
purposes of standing.
Isn't it just check your common sense?
No, Your Honor, I don't think anything about this industry can be done by reference to common sense, because this is so complicated and there's so many tens of thousands of miles of track that you simply don't know what costs are going to be in 2016. So I don't think you can assume anything with respect to how costs are going to be allocated, and it's certainly not part of this case because this is a facial challenge, not a cost-based challenge, and the Surface Transportation Board will be able to assess the rates, whether they're reasonable or not reasonable.
What about the idea that the agency changed its position without sufficiently explaining that?
Oh, my word. Did the agency explain its position or not? They set out a whole new rulemaking. They say, we're changing our position, and this is why. Now, this court has only required the agency to acknowledge a prior rule and explain why it's changing it. And it certainly did that here. They had multiple reasons, and we'll just go through them. This is President Obama's executive order in 2011, and that is different than President Clinton's order. If you all you have to do is look at Section 6 of that executive order of President Obama, and you'll see that there's an absolute imposition, have a retrospective review of existing regulations. So you won't find that in President Clinton's order. And the agency did that not only for this rule, but for all a bunch of other rules that the Federal Railroad Administration was also administering. There's nothing untold about that. It also had new evidence that imposition of the two-part test would result in hundreds of millions of dollars of additional costs on the railroads. It's not just on the railroads, that's on the U.S. economy, because all those costs would have to be passed through. So the statute was not designed to create positive train control requirements on tracks for which poisonous by inhalation materials is not moving, or which passenger traffic is not moving.
That's kind of question begging, because it is moving on that track now. They want to pull it off that track.
Well, Congress said moving as of January 2016.
Right, so they gave them time to move it off the track, therefore limit the cost of the obligation, which is fine.
Which is fine. Because Congress anticipated in setting that date.
It's going to be a pain for the industry to
get
its stuff from point A to point B, because it's going to be rerouted.
Yes, it is.
Right.
But Congress didn't say you have to ship it on rails as they existed in 2008. Congress said we'll give you to 2016 to create a system, and gave enormous amount of discretion to the Secretary of Transportation to figure out how that system would work. And that is perfectly reasonable, because that contemplates that the whole narrowing of track will take place, because Congress understood that this was extremely expensive and that cost would be passed on to the rest of the economy. Now, there is full remedies that the shippers have for any failure to provide common carriage. Nothing in this regulation disturbs that in the slightest.
All right, let me take you back to something you said in the very beginning. If in 2016 the STB imposes the common carriage requirement on a track that is no longer going to have the positive train control, and I thought you said an STB will, of course, require, however you put it, I don't know, that it meet the anything the FRA sets down.
No, Your Honor.
All right, then tell me what you said.
It's the Surface Transportation Board says, carrier Y, you have a common carriage obligation to serve this shipper, and we're going to enforce it.
Okay, now let me stop you there. And then I thought you said, and also you're going to have to comply, in order to do it, with the FRA PTC requirements.
At that point, the carrier is going to have to bring himself into compliance with those rules regarding PTC compliance. Absolutely.
And what if the carrier says it's impossible?
Well, it's not impossible. It's just a matter of cost. No one's suggesting here that it's impossible.
Okay. So it's just a matter of cost.
It's just a matter of cost. And to the extent that the carrier says, well, we have to comply with PHMSA's routing regulations, that's fine. The idea here is that by common carriage, not by particular route or particular track segment, but by reference to the carriage of the chlorine in the first place. So at that point, the carrier has to comply because he's got an order from the Surface Transportation Board.
You said it's just cost. You also said that's the reason you changed, or FRA changed, because it was going to be hundreds of millions of dollars in cost to meet the first two rules.
That's right. But you see,
well, do we know what it would cost in 2016 if STB says you've got to provide common carriage and the railroad says it's too costly to do it down this line, it's too costly to do it down that line?
Well, the routing will be controlled by the PHMSA regulations. The actual obligation to provide carriage will be by reference to those routes that now will have to have, unless there's an exception otherwise provided for in the rules, will now have to have positive train control technology installed. And the cost at that point becomes irrelevant because Congress has made that choice already.
No matter the cost.
No matter the cost.
All right.
So if they got an order and it requires X amount of money to reach that order, then the carriage bears it.
Yes, the STB is most likely going to order the carriage over the lines already equipped with a positive train control as opposed to the simplest direct route.
Well, the STB rates and service, but the PHMSA, the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, controls the routes. So those routes will have to be coordinated with PHMSA. So you have a complex regulatory system here, but it does work, because you have people who are looking at safety considerations to keep chlorine from DC, for example. It will also enforce the common carriage obligations, and you have an intermeshing with positive train control. But positive train control takes a backseat to the common carriage requirement. It just does. And that's what the agency has said over and over again. Now, I understand that the Chlorine Institute doesn't believe us, but that's the law. Nobody repealed the common carriage statute. Nobody repealed.
If we say that in our opinion, you're good with that.
I'm absolutely good with that. You may indeed say that in your opinion. I see my time has more than expired. If there are any further questions, I'd be happy to.
I think that more everybody talks, the more confusion. But, right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Does Mr. Donovan have? No, he doesn't. Why don't you take a couple minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm fascinated by your question. If you say in your opinion that the STB has the statutory authority to order positive train control to be placed on a line in order to meet common carrier obligations, FRA is okay with that. FRA may be okay with that, but our brethren at the AAR aren't. That case will be on certiorari before the opinion comes out. There's just no way, number one. Number two, if you do say that, I will take great pleasure and declare this a victory, which will make my clients very happy. I don't think it's going to stand up, but okay.
Why not? I guess the theory is
the statute at question 49 U.S.C. 11101 says you can only demand transportation upon reasonable request, and requiring the carrier to impose PTC over a line of rail that FRA says they don't have to put it on is not a reasonable request. It's blatantly unreasonable. Require them to put PTC on a line of track that FRA says they don't need it on?
Regardless of the cost.
Regardless of the cost. I mean, okay. Yeah. Number one. Number two, the rerouting that Your Honor suggests kind of anticipates that somehow or another you can get there
right.
A different way.
No.
You can't. There's only one railroad that goes to U.S. Magnesium in Salt Lake City. And if PTC isn't installed on that track coming out of that plant, it ain't coming out.
By rail.
By rail.
So what does the STB do with that?
Not a thing. What are they going to do? Say, come in. There's the question. Can the STB then come in and stick out his chin and say, we order you to put PTC on there even though...
Well, we order you to give the, to provide the carriage, and then in turn, the PTC has to be installed.
If Your Honor thinks that that's within the statute, statutory interpretation of the STB, one wonders why the FRA didn't ask the STB that question. They could have. Whether that would be, they just say it. They didn't ask the STB what their interpretation was. So, you know, that's one problem with this argument. The other thing about this 2 years that counsel refers to, the 2-year request for continuing to move over non-PTC equipped track is only at the behest of the railroads. If the railroad wants to move traffic for 2 years, it can. If a shipper wants to move it for 2 years, no. The regulation in point, we quoted in the brief, we cited in the brief, simply doesn't permit that. It permits the railroad to request a 2-year hiatus for implementation, but it doesn't allow the shipper to do it. And I suggest to you, given the incentive that the railroad has not to install PTC on track that otherwise wouldn't be required to have it, they're not going to ask for the 2 years. They're not going to request that they be allowed to put PTC on a line of track. That would be insane for them to do that. Their whole purpose here is to eliminate as much track as possible from the PTC requirement. They've been arguing that for a generation. And it's all over the FRA first two final rules. The FRA knows that you cannot justify positive train control strictly on safety benefits using a cost-benefit analysis. And Congress knew it.
I guess I shouldn't be asking you this, but I thought their incentive was, the railroad's incentive, was to funnel this kind of material onto as few tracks as possible.
Their incentive is to eliminate it. That's what they want to do. That's what they've been trying to do.
Assuming they can't do that.
They can put it on the passenger track. They can put it on the track that otherwise would be equipped.
Right. So maybe I'm missing it. I just want to make sure I'm clear. Assuming they can't just eliminate carriage of it, they're trying to funnel it into as few tracks as possible.
And the result of that,
is that your understanding?
Yes, and the result of that is going to be eliminate a lot of destinations. For example, U.S. Magnesium, even if they're not shut out from getting out of their plant, isn't going to be able to move it to Texas. Chlorine will get to Texas, but it's not going to be from U.S. Magnesium.
Government this again, but I thought there was, under the way the system's going to work as the government was describing it to us, no destinations could be eliminated.
Well, Council says that, but FRA didn't say that. And since FRA didn't even tell us what 10,000 miles they're talking about, I don't know how anybody can make that conclusion.
Well, that suggests it's not ripe. But anyway.
Well, the whole rule may not be ripe. Mm-hmm. I think our injury is imminent because we're threatened with this. I think this is clearly within the four corners of Chamber of Commerce, the most recent standing case here. I think we're looking down the barrel of an incentive on the part of the railroads, which they have admitted over the years, which the FRA has noted in their first two final orders. They say the railroads do well not to contend that they don't want TIH off their lines because we know better. So the railroad incentive is to cause us injury and to do themselves financial good. There's nothing illegal in the sense that that's somehow thievery, but it does cause us injury, and it's only possible because the interpretation or the lack of interpretation that FRA is now engaged in.
I've got two questions. One, if you know, what can be shipped by, how can chlorine be shipped by truck, or can it?
It can be. There are about 100 chlorine trucks in the country to carry 3 or 4 million tons. Okay. So obviously, you have to throw away the entire rail fleet, which we own. The railroads don't supply the cars. So we'd have to get rid of the rail cars and then go get trucks. And then you're going to have trucks moving thousands of miles with 4.5 trucks for every carload of rail. That makes no sense.
Well, the trucks, the number you mentioned just now, where do they carry it from?
In large part, there are a couple in other places. There's always an off situation. In large part, that happens in Southern California, where the Department of, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of the exact department, but the water purification people in Southern California do not want rail cars of chlorine coming into Los Angeles. So they require it to be offloaded outside of LA and brought in by truck. And that's why there's, I think there are 80 or 90 trucks there, and maybe 10 and scattered around the country in other unique applications. Probably where you need water purification and volume, but you don't have any rail tracks.
Okay. I've got one last question, and that is, I heard you say that if STB can require common carriage and can force PTC regardless of the cost, then I want to ask this question, and it's a serious question, but then what is the function of the FRA? If the STB...
The FRA is making this up, Your Honor. They're just making it up as they go along. That the STB can order this. The STB can't order this. This would never get past your review. The statute, the STB, the last time they looked at this, said the common carrier obligation is not absolute. It has to be a reasonable request. And UP, in the case we referred to involving U.S. Magnesium, said this was not a reasonable request because you're moving chlorine farther than you had to. The STB said, no, that's not far enough. But they're still looking at the issue of whether TIH traffic is so dangerous that maybe common carrier obligation doesn't apply to it. Hopefully we don't get to that, or I'll be back here. But it clearly is within some discretionary authority for them to say something is so dangerous you can't move it.
We want to ask the government one more question.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
On that point about destinations being eliminated, is that possible?
You know, that's a determination that would lie solely within the discretion and function of the Surface Transportation Board. It's, as far as I know, that's never been ordered. As far as I know, that's not an imminent risk or a substantially probable risk. It's certainly not a risk created by this regulatory scheme. I mean, I reiterate, the Surface Transportation Board won't order the railroad to install.
Why isn't it a risk created by this scheme? Because they're going to pull track out, so it's no longer going to carry this material. And I think the representation is, and it's not going to just be rerouted to get to the destination. There's going to be no way to get to certain destinations.
With all due respect to my opposing counsel, that's nonsense. The common carriage requirement requires that the common carrier provide shipment upon reasonable request. That statutory requirement has not changed. It's administered by the Surface Transportation Board. There will be common carriage if there's a reasonable request. That's just the law as it stands right now.
Why would the STB say it's not a reasonable request because there's no positive train control?
That's because he seems to have this conception that the positive train control regulation trumps the common carriage, when the opposite is actually true.
And we know that. Other than you saying that, how do we know
that? You know that because, one, it's in the regulatory rulemaking that the agency itself said that. We know that because 49...
We know that the STB agrees with that.
There's no indication that it does not, and it's not my burden to prove the negative. It is their burden to prove that somehow they're not going to get carriage. And right now, because it's a facial challenge and they have not challenged any actual implementation plan, it's utterly hypothetical.
I'm on the STB in 5 years, and I get a request to carry chlorine over track that doesn't have PTC. I'm going to say that's nuts. That's unreasonable.
That's right? Not true.
You don't think so?
I do not think so. I think if the FRA will then require by its regulations, as they require now, that if you're going to carry poisonous bite inhalation materials over that track segment because of an STB order, then you must comply with those regulations. Those regulations exist entirely separate from the STB's jurisdiction, and the STB doesn't administer them. The FRA administers them to require positive train system components to be installed where there has to be poisonous by inhalation carriage.
You don't here represent the STB, though, right?
I here represent the Department of Transportation. The STB is an independent regulatory board. So I cannot represent to the court that I'm here speaking on behalf of this.
I understand. I just wanted to make clear as a formal matter.
That's certainly true. Yeah.
And so it is not your position that it would be that the STB would order the imposition of the PTC.
What the STB would order is common carriage. the FRA would order the installation of the positive train control system components on the track necessary for the railroad to provide that common carriage. That's how it works.
During the delay?
There's a two-year slack. Now, because
he says the railroads can deny it during the 2 years.
The railroads can't deny it because the railroads have to comply with the Surface Transportation Board order. So the railroads, of course, are going to make the request for that two-year standard because they have no other means to provide the common carriage. Common carriage trumps, not the other way around. That's how this whole system works. And once you understand that, it's really easy.
You said that.
That's, I know. It's not that easy.
It is easy, Your Honor. It is.
Oh, you were going to. An hour ago.
I did. I'm still trying to say it. Thank you, Your Honor.